Rod Sullivan, Angela Corey, the state attorney, is personally prosecuting Michael Dunn in the courtroom. Of course, the jury selection is set to get underway momentarily. A lot is at stake for the state attorney as the national media shines on her office once again.
Yeah, I think that, I applaud any state attorney who gets out of the office and gets into the courtroom now and then, but I think you have to pick and choose your trials, and I think she's picked this one as one where she thinks there's a high likelihood of success for the prosecution, and it would be good for her politically if there's a conviction. Of course, you just never know what's going to happen in a trial, and if there were either an acquittal or a mistrial or the case was reversed on appeal, that could hurt her politically.
Jeffrey N. Wilder, in many ways, the eyes of Florida, of the nation are on Florida once again over a high-profile and controversial murder case involving, although there are some differences between the two, between what happened with George Zimmerman and what's going on now, but between a middle-aged man with a gun and an unarmed African-American teenage male.
Yeah, it's an instant recall moment, if you will. So I think that, you know, there's definitely lots of similarities and, of course, differences, but this really, allows many folks in the African-American community and also people who are still concerned about the state of race relations to take another opportunity to reflect, and people are really waiting patiently to see what's going to happen with the outcome of this trial. A lot of folks were disappointed with the Zimmerman verdict, and so people will look to this as a way to sort of gauge where we are if there's been progression.
549-2937. We'll go to your calls about the Michael Dunn trial in just a moment. Janet Johnson, you're a defense attorney, but as you've said previously, the prosecution has a very strong case against Michael Dunn. Why?
Well, yeah, I mean, this feels like a do-over, but it's really not. I mean, here's a man who left the scene and sort of, you know, hid out, ostensibly ordered pizza, didn't do anything until the next day when he learned that people might be looking for him as a criminal defendant. You know, stand your ground does sort of require after the fact that you stand your ground as well and you take responsibility, because I've been told when I try to run this defense and I hire an expert, your client, if she hid or tried to cover up, does not show that she didn't think that she did something wrong. Consciousness of guilt is indicative of, you know, fleeing and hiding and not reporting it, and that's essentially what Dunn did. He's not going to stack up well, believe it or not, against George Zimmerman, which is, in our community, a pretty low bar, but I don't think he'll even get there.
Well, Rod Sullivan, let's go over the facts of the case, what we do know. This happened at a gas station down in the Bay Meadows area the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Michael Dunn had come from a wedding with his girlfriend. He pulled into the gas station parking lot. A group of teens are in another vehicle playing loud music. He asked them to turn it down. They do it first, then they turn it back up. Then words are exchanged. Then the gunfire rings out. Dunn tells police he thought the teens had a gun and were threatening him. JSO says there was no weapon in the teen's car, that mouthing off to Dunn doesn't constitute a deadly threat. So how does the defense for Michael Dunn play this?
You know, they have to play it like this. The car in which the decedent was in drove away. And it drove away across the street to a strip mall and left somewhere between 90 seconds and a few minutes, depending on who you believe. In that strip mall, there are 10 dumpsters. There are areas of grass and fences and things of that nature. And I'm sure what you're going to hear the attorney for Mr. Dunn say is, well, there was a gun, but they disposed of it.
And Jeffrey N. Wilder, Michael Dunn, in his testimony to the police, said he told this group of teens to turn down their thug music.
Yeah.
What about that, thug music?
Well, I mean, it's coded language for race. And then we also see in the letters that Dunn writes later in the months thereafter that he is clearly, feels very negatively about these teenagers in the car. He does not think that they're, productive members of society. He thinks negatively about them, calls them thugs. And so he definitely has a lot of prejudice and sort of stereotyping in his mind that I believe he brought with him at that very moment. And it just turned into the perfect storm for, a lifetime perhaps on the part of Dunn of being prejudiced and stereotyping, being met with folks who probably had an experience in their lives of being racially profiled. And so it was a random moment in time that really turned into a tragedy.
And the state stand your ground law is bound to be part of the national media coverage. Jordan Davis's mother has now become an activist campaigning for repeal of this law. Janet Johnson, Rod Sullivan, that's not likely given the political landscape in Florida, but it's certain to come up at some point during this trial, right?
I mean, I think it will be asserted. What Corey Strolla, who's the defense attorney, you know, he's given a lot of interviews. He was quoted by USA Today over the weekend saying that basically these boys concocted a story and they got together and for 4 days made up a story that they then, you know, the truth will out. I think what will happen if there's a conviction, though, is it will essentially take the heat off of Stand Your Ground. I think they'll be able to say, and, you know, maybe if there's a different, you know, governor and there's a different, you know, political landscape, they'll be able to say, look, Stand Your Ground works when it's supposed to and it fails when it's not supposed to. And I think that that's why this is, you know, sort of for Angela Corey, it may be an important trial that she win.
Rod Sullivan.
Yeah, I mean, the Stand Your Ground is really the choice between using deadly force or retreating. And I don't really see where it comes into play in this case. He says there was a shotgun pointed at him. If there's a shotgun pointed at you at close range, is retreat an option? Did he fail to exercise the option to retreat and shoot instead? I just don't see any of this really being an issue in this case. It's a political issue in Florida, but
right. You don't think it'll be an integral part of his defense?
I don't think it will. No.
And Dr. Wilder, Stand Your Ground is viewed through a racial prism by many Floridians.
Absolutely. I think it depends on who's involved. And you know, we see with this case, an African-American teenager being the victim of a crime. We saw that with the Trayvon Martin case. So given the landscape of our nation, the landscape of Jacksonville and even of Florida, you know, who's involved is always going to be make it a racialized issue.
Lots of calls. Meanwhile, as jury selection gets underway this morning downtown at the Duval County Courthouse in the trial of Michael Dunn, what are your thoughts about the case? 549-2937 to join the conversation here on First Coast Connect. Let's begin with Tom on the South Side. Hello, Tom. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Senate Bill 436 is one of the best bills that's ever been passed in this state. It's been around since it was enacted in 2005. It was just amendments to the Castle Doctrine, which was already in place in this state. It doesn't say black. It doesn't say white. It doesn't say Hispanic. And it doesn't really, in my opinion, and I've got the bill in my hand, okay? Anybody can go out and read this complete bill and all the amendments online, and you can see where it really doesn't apply. Even though this man had a right to be where he was supposed to, and the bill says, you know, a place you have a legal right to be, which is the gas station. If these guys came back with a gun, I think they would need a picture of these people with a gun, or someone would have to say, yes, we had a weapon, because I think it's going to revolve around whether there was an actual weapon and whether you can prove that this man had a right to fear for his safety.
Yeah, and I think his whole defense hangs on that, Tom. Thank you for the call, Tom. Janet Johnson.
Well, Tom makes a great point, because in Zimmerman, what unfortunately happens a lot of the time in a Stand Your Ground defense is one of the witnesses is alive and one of them is dead. So it's very hard to refute it. In this case, it's unusual because there are four live witnesses. And
let's talk about the witness. What have the witnesses given in the way of evidence so far?
Well, it's consistent with what the forensics are. There was no weapon, they said, and that here's this man who sort of just exploded at them and was, you know, kind of, and we all, I think, would say it might be unreasonable that if you're at a gas station, a place where you aren't lingering, why have a confrontation at all? And apparently the behavior was consistent with that, and they felt threatened by him, not the other way around. So if there's a, you know, what my clients always say, he said in this, you have four people who can say that isn't the way it was, and then one person who has something at stake. He's the criminal defendant, and, you know, for whatever reason, juries are less likely to believe that.
We'll go back to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. Professor Sullivan.
I think the critical witness is the she said, the fiance / girlfriend. I mean, she doesn't have an interest in defaming the person who was shot, and her interest naturally would be to protect her fiance. And apparently she's going to say, look, I was in the store, I didn't see a gun. And then after this all happened and we left, he never mentioned to me anything about a gun. And I think that's very, if that's the way the testimony comes out, I think that's very critical to Dunn's case.
And Dr. Wilder, as you mentioned, Dunn's letters from the Duval County Jail were made public, and they were certainly an interesting read. Now there's a court fight about whether his phone calls can be released as well, revealing just providing a window into his thinking, his attitudes, and so forth.
Absolutely. You know, we still don't know if they're going to be, you know, admissible in court. But I think absolutely, as you say, they provide a window into a gentleman who has clearly, you know, been very stereotypical of African-American young males and brought that with him that evening.
And let's go back to your calls as we discuss the Michael Dunn trial. National media and hundreds of news crews, in fact, from around the world are covering this in downtown Jacksonville. Mike in Fruit Cove, thanks for holding, Mike. You're on the air, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. I know what the national media is trying to do, and it's usually a political agenda in this case, to paint Jacksonville, Florida, again, as some sort of dangerous place for black kids. It's not that case. I am a conservative. I can tell you that the race relations have never been better, in spite of the fact that this guy was white and he shot a black teenager. He's going to be convicted unless, and it's a real reach for anybody's imagination to think that those kids had a gun in the car. The guy went off, he lost control. He'll be convicted, okay? It's not a racial conviction. It's not a damning indictment of white people. And why does the media always try to drum that issue up? I mean, it's pretty sad.
But, you know, and Mike, that's a great point. Melissa, I was on HLN on Friday, and there was
Headline news,
and there was a supposition, well, this is another race issue. And, you know, I did say, and I got a lot of heat, I think a white jury, a black jury, a mixed jury, I think anyone's going to look at these facts, especially, I think it's more if you're a parent and you think, this could be my son. He's at the gate station doing something he has every reason to do. And, you know, adults should have more restraint, should not go off on children over their music.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I mean, older folks don't like younger people's music. I mean,
well, they don't like younger people.
And young people right. being loud and rowdy. It's been that way for forever.
Right.
The only difference is in this situation, the older guy had a weapon and used it as the confrontation escalated. You know, we can discuss the racial aspects of this case, but there's also a generational aspect to this case.
Yeah, and to the speaker's point about whether this is a black guy from Jacksonville, remember, Dunn is not from Jacksonville.
Exactly.
I mean, he's from Brevard County.
Right.
He's here for a wedding. And we also don't really know much about the effect that alcohol had on it. You know, was he inebriated or at least tipsy? Were his inhibitions lowered? And I think all those things come into play as well.
And Dr. Wilder, people say they don't like the national media focus on Florida, but for whatever reason, Florida tends to have a disproportionate number of these high-profile trials that draw an intense amount of interest. And so the national media covers them because they are reflecting the public's interest.
Of course. And, you know, we would be silly to think that race would not play a factor. Even at the end of the day, it didn't play a factor in it. Because who's involved, it's going to be a racial thing. That's why the national media is, you know, here and in the spotlight.
Well, and as well because of the outcome of the Zimmerman trial. And once again, Angela Corey, our state attorney, is involved in this case. And she's personally going into the courtroom to prosecute.
Right. So there are, again, lots of similarities. But, you know, part of the reason why this has drawn so much attention is, again, the time. It's on the heels of the Zimmerman case. It's who's involved. And people, again, really want to see what's going to happen. I think this is another one of those, you know, as you mentioned, flashpoints that speak to these issues on race. And, you know, some folks may argue that race relations is better, but it depends on who you ask.
Yeah. And when I was listening to the caller just now, it reminded me of the study JCCI did on that a few years ago. White residents of Jacksonville think race relations are better than ever. African-American residents of Jacksonville say they're not so good.
Yeah.
So depending on who you are, your perception is markedly different.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, the caller, I think, Mike, makes a great point, though. It does put the people of Jacksonville on the defense and say, you know, your white jurors will not do the right thing, will not follow the law. And I think, you know, what started the whole trend in Florida of these national trials was actually Jody Arias, which had nothing to do with any of these things, not even weapons, not stand your ground. I mean, there is this sort of joke about Florida being, you know, a sunny place for shady people. And I think we live up to that trial after trial after trial.
You got full-out laughter from Rod Sullivan on that one.
I had never heard that before. That is pretty funny.
Let's go to Pat down in Fleming Island. Hello, Pat. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks, Melissa. It sort of makes my point. I think a lot of us worry is after Angela Corey's her judgment with the Melissa Alexander case and the way they pretty much botched that Trayvon Martin case, does she have the capabilities to come through on this? I mean, this is a real big test for Angela Corey as to whether, you know, a lot of us are looking, going, how's she going to mess this one up?
I mean, say what you want about Angela Corey. She is a trial attorney, and I don't think she's fully competent and even, you know, hyper-competent to try this case.
Let's discuss that. Janet Johnson, Angela Corey made her bones as an outstanding trial attorney. Of course, she's faced a lot of criticism in her leadership of the office. I don't think anyone, even her detractors, would say that she's bad in the courtroom.
No, I've known her for 20 years. I've gone up against her for most of those 20 years, and she's not going to mess up. She's not going to drop the ball. And I think those other cases, while her name is on the office door, I don't think they're attributed directly to her. I mean, obviously Zimmerman was kind of something that was handed to her, and I'm not sure that it was handled necessarily correctly, but I think there were expectations and she had to do something. Marissa Alexander, you know, that was a plea bargain that was rejected. That would have been 3 years, but instead, you know, they tried to assert standard ground but couldn't because of her arrest, and she got the mandatory 20 years. Again, not something that you can necessarily put at her doorstep.
And Dr. Wilder, it was fascinating to watch the Zimmerman trial because the state attorney faced criticism from the right and the left. Conservatives saying, why is this man being charged at all? Those who really wanted Zimmerman to face hard times saying they're not going after him well enough.
Right. I think it's, you know, it's hard to please the masses, particularly when people are in such very different ideological starting points. So, again, it becomes difficult. And ultimately, regardless of the outcome of this case, I think some folks are going to be disappointed. So I think it's important for us to think about what the broader issues are, which is why this case has brought so much national attention in the first place.
And here's a tweet from a listener, Lee Brown, an African-American, tweeting the show, "In our society, it is always plausible to assume that black youths are carrying guns. So sad."
Agreed. And this, again, is what Michael Dunn wrote about in his letters. So, you know, again, the broader issues are the profiling of, you know, young African-American teens, Hispanic teens, folks in general of color. We still have a long way to go, and these types of trials really bring us back to those important conversations. We need to find some real solutions on these things.
Dan in St. Augustine has some thoughts. He's on the line. Hello, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, my comment is that the young black fella was not a kid. He's a teenager. He's driving. And Dunn was objecting to the loud music. All the boy had to do was turn the music down, and it would have been done. You and I would have turned the music down if it was offending somebody else. But he chose to keep it up and argue with him.
Well, I think here,
I don't have a whole lot of sympathy.
I think here, too, the music was turned down. The driver of the vehicle complied and turned the music down. And Jordan was in the back seat and said, no, turn it back up. Don't listen to him. And I'm sure there were some, you know, some four-letter words interspersed in his conversation and probably some hurled at Dunn. So these things usually, you know, they don't happen in the spur of the moment. There is a ramping up to this level of violence. And I'll bet there's a lot that happened that's not really been described in the press.
And Dan, I'm sure what the prosecution will argue is that a grown man should have more judgment than, or should have more clarity of mind and a cooler head than a bunch of teenage kids. I mean, yes, they're teenagers, but they're still minors.
And a gun owner should have more. I mean, this is the gentleman in South Florida who, you know, had popcorn thrown at him and was objecting to someone texting. The penalty for texting shouldn't be death. And I think that's the same situation here, that if you own a gun, you have a heightened sense of responsibility that you cannot use it to settle ordinary disputes that, you know, just words suffice.
And certainly that's what the prosecution will argue.
It's an effective argument, I think.
Yeah. Let's go to Ima. Ima, is that your name?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I just have a quick observation. The thing is, as far as, like, the music, what the guy was talking about, I'm thinking that, you know, with some of the music that the young kids are listening to today, who's to say that those lyrics were saying what he says that he heard? And then, you know, like, with everything that goes on with the lyrics, everybody's doing the hand signs and all this stuff. Who's to say it was something like that?
Well, right, but But Ima, does that? Do you think then that that someone is entitled to shoot somebody?
No.
Because I mean, I agree. You know, let's take it at the worst case scenario. This is Janet Johnson. You know, let's say that he was doing. You know, the music's offensive. The music is loud. The kids are talking back. Let's say all of those things are true. The action has to be reasonable, and I think that's going to be the question.
That will be. And here's an email from Mickey, or excuse me, a tweet from Mickey. Remember here that the JSO did their job well. This is not the same as the Zimmerman fiasco. Credit is due here. JSO, Dr. Wilder came in, interviewed witnesses, found evidence quickly. Law enforcement's role in this. But your thoughts about that last caller?
You know, it's just not that not that simple. You know, just cut the music down and walk away. You know, I think that we forget that these young men in their car were minding their own business, and they should be extended the same rights and of humanity and citizenship and personhood just as anyone else. And if they were playing classical music, would there have been a fight in the first place? Probably not. So these things, again, don't exist in a vacuum. They need to be sort of, you know, connected to the larger issues going on. And, you know, unfortunately, it has to do with stereotyping and profiling of these young men.
David at the beaches has been holding. Hello, David. Thank you for holding. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment again. You know, I think I made this comment several months ago on another radio show you were having. So many middle-aged white Americans are afraid of African Americans, especially.
Oh, are you still there, David? We lost his call. I think we get the gist of what he was going to say.
We do, but I also think I think it crosses, all areas, because I think it's not just people are afraid of young people, of African-American people. I think, once someone has a gun, and that is the ultimate criticism to me of Stand Your Ground, that once someone has a gun, it is not an equal playing field. And people with guns can't just unholster them because they don't like the music, they don't like the texting, they don't like your behavior in a movie theater. And you can have fear, but I don't think ultimately Michael Dunn's actions are going to be seen as coming from fear. I think they're going to come across as coming from anger, and that's where you lose self-defense.
Rod Sullivan.
Yeah, again, I don't think Stand Your Ground plays much of a role here. You know, murders are down about half today what they were in 1980, yet we have more guns, we have more Stand Your Ground, more concealed weapon permits. I just think that there are a lot of senseless acts of violence that go on, and that when they become racially charged like this one, they become newsworthy.
And Dr. Wilder, your final thoughts.
Again, I think that it's important for us to continue to have these conversations. This is a tragedy, for everyone involved on all sides, just like the Zimmerman case was, just like the millions of other cases that we never have an opportunity to hear about. We need to keep the conversation going, particularly given that it's February and this is Black History Month. It's our time to celebrate the legacy, to remember, to embrace our future, and to really find ways to come together as a society.
Thank you all for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
We were joined by Janet Johnson, criminal defense attorney, and professors Rod Sullivan of Florida Coastal and Jeffrey Ann Wilder of UNF.